C2SP. Number 6A.
We come to the last subject in this part one, love. And love is always the fulfillment of a subject, so we should find here the highest answer to the problem of spiritualism. And actually the subject here is that before the all-embracing spirit, spiritualism is found to be nothing. That's our epitome. So for the first time she will show us that actually spiritualism is just an illusion, that it does not exist in reality, that it is nothing. Can you see, she doesn't start out the chapter by saying spiritualism is nothing, and then say, all right, because it's nothing, we close the pages and that's that. That's what the Christian Scientist, who is not a Christian Scientist, does. He just wipes it away and says spiritualism is just a blah blah, and there is nothing in it, and it's just an illusion, and it doesn't exist, and so on. And that's the end of the story, which means that we do not see through the error called spiritualism, that spiritualism is working in us. What is not handled is working in us, and we are blind to the fact of spiritualism. Therefore, only at the end, when she has analyzed what the claims of spiritualism are, she did that in the up to the tone of life, she analyzed it, and then she could say in truth that the true understanding of spirit would correct this belief of spiritualism and destroy it, so that finally at the point of love she can say, you see, actually it isn't anything, but only that now. So let's see how she reasons this out, and we'll go through the subtones and then perhaps again through all the subtones in order to see the impact of that subject. We come first to love as mind. Our epitome here is that it is of no value to try to prolong the illusion of material life when this illusion must inevitably fade out. Is that clear here, what she says? If I try to put it into blunt words, she says, if spiritualism is that which tries to prolong life in matter, then, and as we see, it is an illusion, then why try to prolong that belief? There's no reason why we should prolong that belief. And this brings about quite a few questions that are not so easy to answer. And then comes the belief that somebody says, well, then the best thing is I kill myself. Then I end the belief of life in matter. But that is no answer, because as the tree falls, so it lies. It dies here or hereafter. We just wake up worse than before. We wake up with the same belief that life is in matter and that we tried out the wrong method to get rid of it. So the only method that we can get rid of it was shown in the whole subject of truth, namely through understanding the signs of spirit and therefore understanding why spiritualism is just a belief. So let's see how Mrs. Eddy deals with this. The side note is quite interesting, a dream vanishing. In that we have already love as mind, namely the vanishing, when love is that which annihilates properly what? The counterfeit of mind, a dream. We have started out with mind showing that with that dream stuff, that spiritualism is like a dream, and that in a dream we experience the very same thing as the spiritualists experience, that it is our belief in the possibility of the human mind producing material things and calling them things, material things, with physical emotions, with physical sensations. So I read here, the period required for this dream of material life, we had that dream of material life, embracing its so-called pleasures and pains, to vanish from consciousness, knows no man. So we cannot define and decide when that dream should end. So suicide doesn't end that dream, because that's not possible. A suicide does not change our consciousness. So we do not know when that dream will end. But Christian scientists know it. They know it very well. It must be at least 90 years or 95 years or even if you are better, 100 years. If you get older than somebody else, you are a better Christian scientist. So Jesus was a very bad Christian scientist. Therefore, the time, the period required is really not something that we can decide. It's something that is being decided by our spiritual progress. Our spiritual progress will decide when that dream will vanish. So no man knoweth, neither the Son, but the Father. So he knows it. So divine mind knows it. We can't know it. Therefore, we should not lay down a law which says that a Christian scientist should get so and so old. That's not the law of divine mind. That's just a human measurement. It's a time measurement, and it has nothing to do with spiritual unfoldment. This period will be of longer or shorter duration according to the tenacity of error. So she even says, well, it will be longer or shorter according to the tenacity of error, meaning nearly also saying that if the error is very tenacious, you live longer. If the error is not tenacious and you can overcome it like Jesus, then you can do it in a few days or in a few years, not in a few days. So it only shows here that we cannot decide on that, that it is a question of how to overcome error. The sooner we can overcome error, the quicker we see that our mission here may no more be necessary, that we can no more do more than if we go on and go into a wider field of experience, to a higher field of experience. That really should be the way. But sometimes one has another mission, and another mission which may say you have still accomplished a mission here on this plane of things, well, then one stays here. If that mission is fulfilled, and no human mind can tell when that mission is fulfilled. Only the divine mind can say that. So we should drop all that nonsense about how long one should live and when death should occur and when it should not occur. Is it occurs too soon or too late? And I don't know. This has nothing to do with working out our life problem, spiritual life problem. Of what advantage then would it be to us or to the departed to prolong the material state and so prolong the illusion, either of a soul inert or of a sinning, suffering sense, a so-called mind fettered to matter? Why, if mind fettered to matter is spiritualism, why should we try every trick we know of to prolong it? Why shouldn't we see that as soon as possible we get out of the belief of mind in matter. And that we do not know. We cannot define that through a time concept, which is an erroneous concept. We can only define that through a divine mind concept. That's the only standard that knows, only the Father knows when it is right. So it helps us to get rid of a human measurement of lifespan, and we translate it into a mission and see we have to fulfill a mission here, and when that mission is fulfilled, and only the Father knows when that mission is fulfilled, not people know when that mission is fulfilled, then the transition takes place. We come to a second subject of spirit, so a love of spirit. The epitome here is to give us a leading. Even if spiritism were possible, we would outgrow material spiritualism through every stage of existence. So even if spiritualism were, she puts that as a possibility, even if spiritualism would be accepted as something true, even then we would have to outgrow material spiritualism as the lifespan goes on and on, or as the life routine goes on. Let's see how she puts it. Even if communications from spirits to mortal consciousness were possible, such communications would grow beautifully less, what an expression, grow beautifully less, with every advanced stage of existence. With every advanced stage of existence, we should gradually come to the oneness with spirit, so that there is no necessity for spirits to tell us what to do and to communicate with us. The departed would gradually rise above ignorance. They too would rise above ignorance and materiality. And spiritualists would outgrow their beliefs in material spiritualism. So she says they have to work it out too. Spiritualists have to work out to be spiritualists and their belief in material spiritualism. Because spiritism consigns the so-called dead to a state resembling that of blighted buds, to a wretched purgatory, where the chances of the departed for improvement narrow into nothingness, and they return to their old standpoints of matter. And again you have the return and the falling back. She says, well, what's the purpose of spiritualism? When much more resembles to a wretched purgatory, because it is still mind in matter, life in matter, substance in matter. This is still the same hell that we suffer here. We go through hell here because of that belief of mingling spirit and matter. That all gives us the hell of pain. If there would be no mingling of spirit and matter, then the body would have no pain. If there was no mingling of mind, capital M, with matter, then there would be no pain, no disease. And so what's the use of prolonging this spiritualism when it is anyway hell? It isn't paradise. And one can see that practically every time when one knows a medium, that those mediums never really look happy, healthy, bright. They always look rather like blighted buds, as if the whole life had gone out of them. They are pale, they are wretched. Oh, no, sorry. They look like that. So what's the use, she says, of prolonging that state if it is resembling anyway like hell? Or we go to soul and see a similar situation here. Here she speaks in Seoul about the unnatural deflection of mortal mind, that they are falsities of the senses and never the natural identities of existence. So the side note is unnatural deflections. You see, it's a counterfeit of soul. Soul has identity, and therefore soul should show the real natural reflections, but that is not seen in the world where spirit and matter conjoin, and that is the material universe. The natural universe is a universe of spirit and of life in matter and spirit in matter. So the decaying flower, the blighted bud, the gnarled oak, the ferocious beast, like the discords of disease, sin, and death, are unnatural. They are not natural. So nature is never really is perfect. Nature has always imperfection. They say that there is not one blade of grass that is perfect. That whatever nature brings forth has some kind of an imperfection. They are the falsities of sense. And you can see the tone of soul, the changing, the opposite of soul, deflection of mortal mind. So all what we see in nature are the changing deflection of mortal mind. They are not the eternal realities of mind. What are the eternal realities of mind? She said that right at the beginning of the chapter, and she said, mind maintains every idea and maintains it immortally, and that these identities are ideas. So this is always a hard thing for people to swallow. They like nature. I like nature. It's nice to go into nature and walk in the mountains and in the forests and through nice green fields and so on. That's nice. But it is not reality. It is not reality. And so most people don't accept that. They feel, well, that's reality, because they say man has not created it, therefore it must have been God that created it. They never accept the third possibility, that it is mortal mind that created it. That is not accepted. And that's where spiritualism has its stronghold, that people do not accept that there is a mortal mind universe. That when I say there is, that it seems to be so. Actually, in reality, there is no mortal mind universe. But we experience a mortal mind universe until we come to the understanding of truth, as we have seen in the sixth subject. So one always wants to accept nature and natural things in the universe as creations of God, instead of seeing that it is spiritualism. It is the mixing of matter with spirit, nothing else, or matter with life, nothing else. And the mortal mind brings them forth. They are the changing deflection of mortal mind, she says here. They are not the eternal realities of mind, capital M. And that's why people don't like to leave this world of matter, because they think it's nice. They never can think out that the spiritual universe is much nicer than the material universe. Or we come to principle. Was that very hard what we read and what I said? That's it. That's where spiritualism has a hold on us.
Well, it explains why there's so much, like this gnarled oak, isn't it?
Yes, it's wrong. But the artist will say it's beautiful. The artist will paint a very nice picture of a nice gnarled oak, you know, and it is beautiful. Isn't it, Betty? Huh? It is. Huh? Yes. But it's not reality. Huh? We have to admit these things. We have to say, okay, I like it, but I like it because I'm not thinking spiritually. I'm not yet there. Huh? Always beautiful, matter is always beautiful, but always erroneous. So this admission is enormously important. We come then to, in the third part of the spiritualism, we start and out with the admission. You see, that we admit that man is God's own likeness. Or else we will never really get rid of spiritualism. Or if we take principle, which we have epitomized and said, to regard spiritualistic communications as oracles is absurd. They are without proof and pernicious in tendency. Well, we have always these kind of oracles in spiritualism. How is it? How unreasonable is the belief that we are wearing out life, that we are wearing out life and hastening to death. He says this is unreasonable. And yet we think, well, that's the course of nature. Nothing can stop it. And it's therefore we say that's quite natural. Everybody has to die. Since time immemorial, all people died. So this is natural. She says it's unreasonable. It's the belief that we are wearing our life and hastening to death, and that at the same time we are communing with immortality. That we are wearing out in life, that we are hastening to death, as other people did, and when they had gone through death, they are spirits, and then they are immortal and can commune as immortal spirits. How unreasonable that is. To think that through death we gain immortality. If the departed are in rapport with mortality or matter, they are not spiritual. If something can be in rapport with matter, then it cannot be spiritual. So the spirits cannot be spiritual. That's why they are corporeal beings. Corporeal beings. Because only spirit can commune with spirit and matter can commune with matter. So they are not spirits. So they are not spiritual, but must still be mortal, sinning, suffering and dying. So the logic of it, we are here in principle, the logic of it is that those that have gone on and say they are spirits and can commune with matter and with mortals, that's unreasonable, because only like can commune with like. Therefore, they have not gained anything. They are just, as he said, just as mortal and as sinning and as suffering and as dying as mortals here. So it hasn't changed anything. Then, why to look to them, even where communication possible, for proof of immortality? There is no proof in that thing. Principle asks for quite another proof, and we'll see when we come to the second part that she shows how we get the proof of immortality, but not through spirits here. For proofs of immortality, and accept them as oracles, and accept them that they can interpret to us being, and can send messages to us that are intelligent and that are wise and that they are guiding and guide us and teach to us. That's what the spirits do when they communicate through a medium, that they lead and guide and so on. So communication gathered from ignorance are pernicious in tendency. Pernicious in tendency is the opposite of love. Huh? They are pernicious in tendency. We are just at home, we had such a very clear case about spiritualism there was in Germany and in Switzerland a great group of spiritualists. They call whatever they called them, it's in German, but they were a big growing group of spiritualists. And they worked through a medium, and the spirit that guided them were a Scottish man that has passed on in 1927. And so that whole group that went into thousands and thousands and attracted mostly young people, they were building up their community through that medium and through the spirit called Joseph, and that Joseph would tell them everything what to do. They would tell them which one should be on the board of the society, which one should be the treasurer, and which one should do this and that. And actually were then teaching about immortality and about spiritual Christianity, how to behave, if there should be abortion or not abortion, when life starts in the fetus, and so on. Teaching, and they all believed it. And it grew and grew and grew until they said, we must have a big temple, a big community house, gathered millions and millions to build a temple, finding out that the treasurer put all the money into a chain of harlots in Germany. I don't know what you call those houses, you know, a whole chain there. And finally lost the money, and so the church had to enter in and close it down. Joseph didn't give very good advice. He didn't. It is pernicious in tendency. Think of it. This is a fact. It's in the paper, and I know it through very good close relationship with people who were in that spiritualistic group. So that happens, you see. Can you see what happens today? There are more spiritualists and spiritists today in the world than we think, because they know that they are regarded as ridiculous if they tell, I'm a spiritist, and so they shut up. They don't tell everybody. But there is a great, what we would call a gray field that is not quite known, that are actually devoted to spiritualism or any kind and shade of spiritualism. So these oracles, you see, they were really the counterfeit of principle. Instead, let God interpret its nature. They went to the wizards and spirits that peep and that matter and believe it and take it as oracles. There are no oracles. They are just beliefs that, by the way, the one who was the treasurer was the son of the medium. I think it's good business. All right.